And I'm sure that the Playboy Bunny, she's thinking, yeah, right.
It's time for The Profitability Show. Inspiring conversations with successful business leaders, artists, and entrepreneurs that will get your blood pumping and your creative juices flowing. We'll focus on the latest and the greatest tools, techniques, strategies, and advice you can apply right now to achieve more success and improve your bottom line, no matter what business you're in. The Profitability Show, the business podcast that brings you less jargon and more margin. With your host, digital product strategist and innovator, Nick Knight.
Hello and welcome back to The Profitability Show. My name is Nick Knight. And today we're going to talk about amazement, because today we have my very good friend, Shep Hyken, who is the Chief Amazement Officer at Shepherd Presentations. And what does that mean exactly? Well, Shep is a customer service and experience expert. He's all about how you can improve your customer service to the point of amazement. He's also a Hall of Fame speaker, a New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestselling author, and a former magician. And there's the amazement connection. He's written books such as Amaze Every Customer Every Time, The Amazement Revolution, and Moments of Magic. Are we sensing a theme here? In his presentations, he not only educates us on all of the great ways that we can really make a huge difference in our companies through the customer service and customer experience front, but also he weaves in comedy and magic. Great guy, a lot of fun to hang out with. I know you're going to enjoy this episode with Hall of Fame speaker, former president of the National Speakers Association, and magician, Shep Hyken. Shep Hyken, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, man. So, you know, you have such an interesting career, and little context, Shep and I knew each other from another career we both share, which is performing magic. So we met many, many years ago in the magic world. And then somehow 100 million years later, we found each other again in the speaking and leadership world. Shep was the at the time, the president of the National Speakers Association. That was an organization that I was getting involved with. And we kind of found each other again. So it's been a lot of fun.
And you know what? I love it. And, you know, we got along right away. Same haircut, same barber.
I know. We look like two brothers right now.
From different mothers.
If you're watching us on YouTube, you're going to have a hard time telling which one is which.
Yeah. Who's who? My name is Nick Knight.
Well, as the past president of the National Speaker Association, I'd like to say a few things. So you're a professional speaker. You're a best-selling author. You're a customer service expert. You know, it's a lot of things. Tell us a little bit about your business, how you became the Chief Amazement Officer. How did that happen?
Sure. Well, back in 1983, long, long time ago, I started my business. As you mentioned, I had a magic background. I'd been performing magic in nightclubs and hotels and also did birthday parties growing up. So I had a little bit of a performance background. I also went to college, and I worked full-time for an oil company, which meant I pumped gas. A lot of people don't know that. No, I actually pumped gas on the weekends, and during the week I worked in their operations department, and I worked in their accounting finance department, did everything while I was in college. And by the way, prior to college, my summer jobs were working for this company too. So when I graduated, I thought, this is what I could do for a living. Stop doing the magic, get serious with life. But they sold the company. They announced the sale about 3 months right out of college, and I stuck with them for a little bit longer and then found myself without a job. Saw a couple of motivational speakers, and I said, I could do that. I can speak because I can get up in front of people. I have a business background, and believe it or not, I had a passion. I wasn't quite sure what to call it, but it was all about building relationships with the customer. And I didn't know it was called customer service. I don't think it was real prevalent back then.
It wasn't a thing yet.
Yeah, IBM was really the customer service company at the time, and everybody else, you know, wasn't quite sure what that meant. But I learned very quickly that that was what I wanted to talk about. And so since that time, I've been speaking, reading, researching, interviewing with people. Companies hire me. I learn an awful lot just by helping them with my expertise. They bring it in, but man, they give me so much more back on, you know, how the application of it works. And I've been fortunate to really work with not probably hundreds, but thousands of clients over the years with presentations. Plus now we have a training company for the last 15, 16 years. We've had trainers working with me to deliver my content. And now we have an online university. So that's kind of how this has grown up to be something bigger than just me going out and doing a speech.
Well, I think it's really cool that like you kind of started the kind of customer service revolution as it is now, because it really is kind of the topic of the day. I mean, everybody's about it. Now, I know social media certainly played a big role in that, because now our customers are front and center and in our face. And, you know, if they don't like what you're doing, they'll let the world know. They have an outlet now. And so it certainly came to the forefront. But I think it's awesome that you started so long ago with this idea of talking about such an important part of our business.
Who would have known? And amazingly, back in the 80s, when it was asked, what are the hot topics? Believe it or not, customer service was a hot topic. It's never not been a hot topic.
Really? Is that right?
I had no idea. And I thought, what can I do differently than any other speaker on the topic of customer service? So At the time, I said, you know, I'm going to focus on internal service, the customers that you have internally. In other words, anybody that depends on you for anything at any given time, that is your situational internal customer. And maybe that helped put me on the map. But you're right about social media. I think social media has brought customer service to a higher level, because the customer now gets to vocally and you know, complain, but amplify that complaint or the positive comment they have if they want to leave that. My friend Jay Bear, I don't know if you know Jay.
Sure.
Jay calls social media customer service a spectator sport.
Which, that is so perfectly put.
It is, because a customer can make a comment and then the company can come back and you can watch this happening in real time if you decided to track it. Plus, it can be distributed. Somebody can hit the, you know, share button or tweet it out to, you know, 1,000 followers or 100,000 or 1,000,000 followers, depending on how many followers you have. If you're Justin Bieber, boy, he's got a lot of followers. But if you're you and I, hey, we're just who we are. But seriously, you have a louder voice than ever before. It used to be the average, according to all the different studies, was if you had a complaint, 8 to 12 people would hear about it, unless 13% of those people would amplify it to 20 or more people. And usually it was word of mouth. Today, it's word of social media, which, you know, it's a multiple of that.
Well, and it's really interesting, too, because just the idea of somebody breaking the ice on a subject. So today, a company has to be very careful, is if you give somebody poor customer support and that's something that's a problem in your actual workplace, then there's going to be other customers that had that poor customer support and they didn't say anything because maybe they don't like to make waves. But as soon as somebody breaks the ice, everybody jumps in. And now you've got hundreds of people saying, yeah, me too. And, you know, that can be a huge problem. So it's more important than ever to really make sure that you've got that buttoned up.
Yeah, and I think it definitely elevates the risk, and therefore, if we want to eliminate the risk, let's just do what's right. That doesn't mean, though, that the customer should hold us hostage. You know, the moment a customer says, "Hey, I'm going to go on social media and complain about this," now that's a threat. Mm-hmm. And you say, "Go ahead," and you know, what can you do? You can't stop somebody from doing that. But the goal would be raise the level of service so that conversation never takes place at all.
Right. And I'd also say that I think you talked about this, because for those who are listening, Shep has a really great, you want to opt into his newsletter. He always has like kind of a funny little cartoon. I don't know if you're drawing those or not, but those are great. But he always has really interesting stuff you talk about, including the customer's not always right, which is something that I've always believed.
Right. But, actually wrong. Or right. Always right.
Yeah, they're not always anything, but I do like the idea
always,
that
they know they are always the customer.
They are always the customer. That's true.
That's the one thing they are always.
Now I've lost my train of thought. Darn you. Let me think here for a second. What was I going to say? I've completely forgotten. It was completely unimportant, so we're just going to move on.
So many things that we talked about today. So you were talking about the newsletter, and if you go to customerservicearticles.com,
yep,
you can subscribe to the newsletter. It's free, and I promise you this. It is a newsletter with an article, not a newsletter with blatant promotion running throughout. It is an article that I send out once a week, And, you know, sure, on the if you want to learn about my book, click on a little link. But we're not going to give you a promotion and try and sell you something. I hope that if you like the articles and you have a business, that you'll share them with your colleagues, print them out. You're even welcome to use them in your own publications. Just give credit where credit is due. And even the cartoons, you're welcome to use those.
Wow, that's fantastic. That's great. So I'm going to just jump off of this path for a second because there's something interesting about your history that I want to share with our listeners.
Okay.
You, back when you were a professional magician, when you were a young man, you performed regularly at the Playboy Club. Is that correct?
That is correct.
How old were you?
In my junior and senior year in college, believe it, or in high school, high school. I'm going to show you a picture. I'm going to pull out my smartphone and see if we can get this.
All right, because this sounds like you just go from one dream job to the next.
This is the most amazing job that a 16-year-old young man could ever have.
Right, right.
No doubt about that. But yeah, it was and the way I got that job was very interesting. I was 15 years old, and I was driving around with a friend of mine, and I said, hey, I hear there's a magician performing at the Playboy Club. And he said, so what does that mean? I said, we should stop and go see if we can see him. Let's see if I can get this picture.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
All right. Oh, yeah. Look at me.
Wait,
look
back up. Just back up. There it is. There, it got in focus. Yep, look at your hair.
A blue jean leisure suit.
Sweet. And a girl in a zigzag for magicians.
Yes, and a girl in a zigzag. That was Heather, Bunny Heather. Heather was beautiful. Pompeo Posar, who was at the time the big photographer for Playboy magazine, said that she may be the most photogenic person that he'd ever photographed.
Wow.
And you
cut her in half.
I sliced her nylons. She did not like that. But so we're driving around and we stop by. And I think this is a great lesson for anybody in business because this, maybe it was naivety. I'm not sure. But I'm T-shirt and blue jeans. Mm-hmm. So is my buddy. Remember, I'm 15. He's 16. I said, just follow me. We walk in the Playboy Club and there's the bunny and says, can I help you? And I said, yes. I understand that there's a magician performing here. Is there any way that we could sit in the back and watch the magician? And I'm sure that the bunny, Playboy Bunny, she's thinking, yeah, right. But no, really, that was legit.
I also only read it for the articles.
So exactly. That's yeah, for the jokes on the last page right behind the centerfold. Right. But seriously, that's what we were interested in. So she went and got the manager rather than just throw us out. She had the manager come over and wonderful man. I'm still friends with him. His name's Herschel Price. And Herschel said to me, hello, who are you? Blah, blah, blah. And I said, I'm a magician. He goes, can you do a card trick for me? I go, well, do you have a deck of cards? And he reached behind the counter and he pulled out a Playboy deck of cards. Now, that's not naked bunnies, you know, women on the cards. It was just the Playboy symbol. He said, do a trick. And I did a trick. He goes, very good. Yes, come on in, sit in the back, enjoy the show. Wow, we're in the show. So saw the show. On the way out, I said, I'd like to thank Mr. Price. And the bunny went and got him. And he said, do another trick for me. And do another trick for me. So I did two more, and he goes, how old are you? I said, 15. He goes, yeah, I knew you were young. When you're 16, call me, and maybe I'll have you do some close-up magic out in the lobby while people were waiting to get on our busy nights. Sure.
Nice.
Called up, and the first 3 weeks, I worked in the lobby. And then after that, when I say the lobby, they had like a holding area, call it a lobby, if you will, as people were waiting to get in. But then, hey, do you want to do the warm-up act for the entertainment? Sure, because I could do the big trick where I slice the girl apart and put her back. And I'll use one of your bunnies. Oh, that would be awesome. And so, yeah, for the next year and a half or so, I was the envy of every member of my class.
And every class. Young man in America. That is awesome.
But I think the story here is that, you know, I had a little bit of guts. I walked into a place. I didn't even think about the way I was dressed, but I think back and go, oh my gosh, I should have probably dressed nicer. But I had the guts. I was polite. I was direct. I knew what I wanted. And I just was asking. It doesn't hurt to ask. What's the worst that someone can do?
That's great.
Say no.
That's right. That's great. So your career now in full swing, You completed a successful year as president of the National Speakers Association. You traveled all over the world during that year. And not that you don't travel anyway, but I think you were on like high travel status.
Yes.
I think you racked up some frequent flyer miles then. And you have a lot of opportunities to choose from. You know, you're a best-selling author. You just got a lot of things kind of going on. Can you talk about now a time when things weren't so rosy?
Sure.
and kind of how you overcame that? Because we've all hit that spot in life. And tell us how you kind of went through that.
I'm never going to say they weren't rosy, because there are people that have tremendously greater problems than I ever have of looking at my calendar and saying, gosh, I'm not going to make any money this month. Mm-hmm. But that's really, in my business, that's the gauge of success from the standpoint of being able to make a living is all, you know, financial. That's your metric. So if I'm making money or not making money, and my wife always says, as I look out, like even now, as we do this episode today, I look out 3 or 4 months and go, gosh, I'm not that busy. And it doesn't matter what time of the year it is. I will always say that. I've said that for the last almost 30 plus years, where I look out 3 or 4 months and go, wow, what am I going to do?
Right.
I will tell you what makes me still get worried is back when I first started, the lead time for bookings is companies would book me a year to year and a half in advance. I was doing a lot of work with General Motors. I was doing special events, plus doing some of their trade shows as a magician, not just a speaker, working with Anheuser-Busch, working, you know, small companies. Anheuser-Busch, yes. And General Motors, proving that alcohol and automobiles – as long as you're not drinking and driving, they still work together well.
That's right.
but those were two pretty big clients. Same thing with Enterprise Rent-A-Car. And all of these clients were hiring me, but they were booking me a year to year and a half out. So in June, I would know most of what the next year was like.
Right.
Well, then I remember the Gulf War, I believe it was, or one of the wars. It was about, I want to say right around 1989 or 90. We hit that war. I'd been in business for 5 or 6 years, and all of a sudden the booking stopped. People were canceling, and now coming back, they weren't booking a year in advance. They were booking 2 and 3 months out in advance. And even today, I'd say the average length of time somebody books me is anywhere from 30 to 90 days out. Now, associations are different. Those are major events that are planned that they, you know, have to plan sometimes 3 and 5 years in advance. They know where they're going to be, and then they start promoting it. They know who they're going to hire, but a company decides to wait until about maybe a month or two before, okay, we've got our meeting, what's going to be the theme, and who's the speaker going to be?
Wow, that's great. So when you hit that spot where things were pretty scarce during that kind of particular time in your life, what kind of thoughts went through your head? Like, what do you, did you have like the thing of saying like, okay, I got to do...
Well, I know the secret. Anytime my business gets low, all we need to do, and this is going to sound so basic, is just pick up the phone and smile and dial.
Nice.
And throughout almost all of my career, and even today, even though we use social media as a tremendous way to get people to actually call me, it pulls people in versus us pushing by making a phone call and aggressively going after a number of, you know, potential clients. But I believe that still the phone is probably the most powerful tool that we have. Because even if people call in, they still want to talk on the phone. But in the beginning, I decided, after listening to Tom Hopkins and Zig Ziglar, I decided I'm going to make 100 calls a week. Mm. If I make 100 calls a week, by the way, there's I don't know if you remember Bud Dietrich, a famous trade show magician.
I know the name.
Okay. Bud passed away. He was my mentor. My illegitimate father is what I used to call him. He was not allowed to call me his illegitimate son. But Bud and I were very, very close. And Bud said, when he found out that I was getting into this business, remember, this is back in 1983, he said, Shep, you need to treat this like a job. 40 hours a week, not of practicing your magic or writing your speech or doing whatever you do. It's 40 hours a week of getting business. And if you spend 8 hours a day, 5 days a week to get business, you will probably get business and be one of the most successful people, because most people in your business and do not spend that kind of time. And I took that to heart. I didn't write my speech during the day. I wrote it in the evenings and on weekends. But during the day, you can find me researching companies that I wanted to call and then picking up the phone and just saying, hi, my name's Shep Hyken. I understand you're the person in charge of putting together the meeting. Is that correct? If they said yes, great. Well, when is your next meeting? What kind of speakers do you use? You know, all the questions I started, and I started asking just lots of questions. And at the end, they were interested or they weren't interested, or, you know, we already have our speaker, call us next year. And I created my little system. This was before computers. Actually, about 1983, computers were just coming on. Mm-hmm. I bought my first computer was an Epson computer, and it had these disks about this big, yep. 5 1/4 inch
yep,
floppy
I remember those.
Disks. CPM operating system or something like that. And I had all the A's in my mailing list on this disk and all the B's on this disk and all the C's.
Yeah.
And if I needed to make a mass mailing, it would take 26, you know, to get all of the, you know, times of doing it over and over again. And anyway, I digress. But I would just pick up the phone and call. I remember going to the newsstand, finding a news, all the magazines that were business related, maybe 5 or 6. Tore out all the pages that were full page ads, stacked them up, and just started to find out, you know, how I can reach them. Had to go to the library back then to get phone numbers and addresses because you couldn't on the internet to get it. So it was
not only was it the thing that everybody kind of dreads doing, which is, okay, I got to just cold call. You know, I mean, that's like the probably on the top 5 list of unpleasant business activities. But you also did it during a time when it wasn't as easy as it is now. Because if I wanted to find the phone number of a company now, or even the person, I'd go to LinkedIn, I'd go wherever. It's pretty fast and easy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I have to give you kudos for that because even, you know, I was in the magic business and I did not follow that advice. That was great advice that Bud gave you, by the way.
Thanks.
To think of it like a business instead of, you know, this sort of, because, hey, it's really easy to slip into it. And there's a lot of entertainers that listen to this show because we interview a lot of entertainers and talk about how their business works. And that's kind of part of this conversation as well. But I think a lot of us, the artist lifestyle, and you don't think of it in business terms, right? You think of it like, well, I do my gig and then I practice my instrument or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And right.
And if you're good, you get hired and you don't think about the business side of it. Well,
yeah.
You know, I think I'm pretty good at what I do, but there's a lot of competition out there. I'll summarize what Bud was saying because I think it's applicable to about any type of business. In my business, it was getting a speaking engagement. So the job isn't doing the speech, it's getting the speech. So that's the first thing. And if you think about it, you can say, you know what, I'm in the, you know, the plastic cup business. And I would say, maybe you are. I kind of see it as this. You're in the selling of the plastic cup business because you can make all the cups you want. Nobody's buying. You don't have a business.
That's exactly right. That's it all kind of comes down to the same thing at the end. And Jeffrey Hazlett was one of our guests. You know Jeffrey very well as well.
Very, very well.
And Jeffrey said, you know, it's all about sales. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're in business, you're selling something.
Right.
And if you're not making sales, you're not in business. And I totally agree with that. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit to you about kind of shine the spotlight on you a little bit and talk about, you know, what's a typical day for Shep like? How do you make your business so successful? And a couple other questions. And then we're going to talk about your profitability, which I think we might have already heard a little bit of that, but we're going to dig a little deeper there. So we'll be back with Shep Hyken, author of Amaze Every Customer Every Time in a few minutes.
Are you looking to learn business strategies from some of the top experts in the world? Or are you looking to earn income as a leading expert yourself? At Revisit, we empower leaders, innovators, and experts to create online learning products that get better over time. Interactive learning products on Revisit remain live connected to the creators who can add or update the content instantly, offer direct access and feedback, exclusive communities, and even special discounts and offers. Our unique app-based solution means the products you buy or create will remain exclusive and valuable in the hands of paying customers only. So, start learning or start earning at revisit.com. That's R-E-V-I-Z-Z-I-T.com.
Hey everyone, Nick Knight here. I hope you're enjoying the Profitability Show. I'm having a blast talking business with these amazing guests. Now, as you know, every business needs a profitability, and this show is no exception because the profitability that I need is your ratings, your reviews, and your subscriptions. So if you can, pull out your phone, go to iTunes right now or in your podcast app and select the Profitability Show, give it a rating, give it a review, and subscribe to the show. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to do that, and I will return the favor with more great shows.
And now, back to the Profitability Show.
And we're back with Shep Hyken, customer service expert, Hyken.com, H-Y-K-E-N, for those of you who can't wait and got your phone in your hand right now and say, where can I find out more about Shep? That's where you can go, Hyken.com, or you can go to this episode's show page at profitabilityshow.com. Shep, so we were talking about some of the things that businesses can use to improve their customer service and stuff. I'm wondering what you think is the number one thing that businesses need to improve upon today or implement in their businesses?
Sure. Well, I mean, the obvious answer, knowing that I'm a customer service expert, would be to say customer service. But let's step back from there. And that would be, as a leader of a company, an owner of a small business or leader of a large business, it doesn't matter, you have to define what your culture is all about. So are you going to be a customer-focused company? Are you going to be one that's more focused on price? And by the way, it's very difficult to have the lowest price in something and still deliver the highest level of customer service. I remember back making a sales call with a client who was going to incorporate what I do into their into the meeting, and he says, would you go with me, and you get to tell them what you do. It'll help us sell. So I remember him saying, you know what? In our business, you get a choice of three things, or there's three things to choose from. One is low price, two is unbelievable service, and three is high quality. You get two out of three.
That's great.
And today you don't get two out of three. You have to have all three out of three. Now, not necessarily the lowest price, because if you're great on the quality and you're great on the service, price becomes less relevant. But if you're going to try to be the lowest price person, think about it in terms of Walmart. They don't have bad customer service. They actually have very friendly customer service when you can find somebody to help you. Mm-hmm. And that, by the way, is the key. They don't staff heavily. You can go to Nordstrom. It's highly staffed, and you'll find plenty of people, and you're not going to find the lowest prices either. So, you know, there's always a balance somewhere in the middle. But I'd say that before you can have a good customer service type of company, you have to have a culture. So you have to define that culture. You have to have a leadership has to do that. And I believe the best way is to do it in one sentence. So what is your one sentence mantra, if you want to call it that? That's what I called it, that could define you. For example, the Ritz-Carlton refers to what they have a credo. It is, we're ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen.
Nice.
Nine words long. Totally defines who they are and what they're about. Now, once they've defined that, they go, okay, we're going to hire people that believe in that, and we're going to train them to deliver on that.
And and I noticed that that has two of the parts, but the third part, it doesn't say, and we're going to be the lowest price.
And we're the lowest price.
Yeah.
By the way, I've stayed at a Super 8 type motel, something like that, in Kentucky for, believe it or not, an event. I did an event for the Paddle Sports Association of America. So they actually go to Kentucky in a river, and they're paddling around and showcasing the latest and greatest paddles, boats, whatever. And they have them in towns in Kentucky where they don't have a Ritz-Carlton. But you know what? The people at that hotel were unbelievable friendly, and transplant those people into Ritz-Carlton, and all of a sudden you've got the people that you want. So you don't necessarily have to have a high price to deliver service. But you know, again, I talked about Walmart versus Nordstrom. You get the idea.
Yeah, that's great. So once we've kind of defined our company culture, and we realize that part of this culture is going to be kind of taking care of our customers, something I really firmly believe is part of the success of our company is that we really make sure that our customers feel like they can have answers when they need them, that we're there to help them and stuff. So I'm a very, very firm believer in that. But what can people do? Like, give us some like actual ideas or tactics or something that says, like, what does that mean? You know, people go, well, customer, I guess that's picking up the phone and saying good morning. You know, it's like, it's not that, right?
Well, no.
What can we do to like actually be great customer service experts?
I mean, a piece of customer service is picking up the phone and being friendly on the phone, but that's one little piece of it. First of all, recognize customer service isn't a department. It's a philosophy to be embraced by everybody. And from the person who's on the phone to somebody in the back room that maybe they don't ever see the customer, but they support somebody who does. So that's important. Number two, look at what your typical customer journey is. They call this journey mapping today. Years ago, I read a book by a gentleman named Jan Carlson. He wrote a book called Moments of Truth. And He talked about the moments of truth in the airline business. He ran Scandinavian Airlines. And he said the first thing a customer does is they pick up the phone and they make a reservation with a reservationist. And that was before the internet, right? Way, way, way back. Back before Al Gore had invented the internet, I think. Or as George Bush called it, the internets.
Yes.
So the journey is, you know, the customer makes the phone call, gets the reservation. Then on the day of departure, they check their bag at the curb. Then they go inside and check it at the ticket counter. And there's these obvious steps that take place. And that's the typical customer journey. So you look at this and you go, okay, first of all, let's recognize that all of these touch points are where we have an opportunity to show how good we are. Are we doing our best? So even as simple as the phone is answered, you know, maybe the person at the end on the, you know, who answers the phone doesn't say, what do you want? You know, but it sounds to the customer calling in as if they're an interruption, regardless of what they say. So maybe there's a proper way to say it. For example, if you call our office, you're going to hear somebody say, good morning, Shep Hyken's office. This is so-and-so. May I help you? If I pick up the phone, I go, hello, this is Shep Hyken. How may I help you? You know, that's just the way we do it. And that's standardized. Everybody answers the phone the same way because we want to make sure we don't leave it to chance. If there's a better way to answer, by the way, I want to hear. And we talk about that on our weekly meetings. You've got the phone call, just to give you an example of that. But something as simple as that, where can it be enhanced? In the airline example, when they, you know, check your bag at the curb. Well, let's watch that. Boy, those lines are getting awful long out there. Maybe we need to staff more. So what we're trying to do is eliminate or mitigate the friction that a customer goes through at every step. So look at all those steps and figure out where you can enhance them. Then behind the scenes, there's what I call impact points. You know, you check that bag at the curb, it goes down a conveyor belt. You see it a few hours later at your destination. At the baggage carousel, probably a dozen, if not more, people touched that bag, scanned it, put it on the right plane, took it off, whatever. A lot could go wrong. You know, it looks like one simple touch point to me. I pick up my bag, but you know what? There's 20, 30 people that might have been involved in making sure that bag showed up. And if any one of them doesn't do their job, the whole service experience fails.
That's great. Wow, really great. So I'd say that probably something that we can apply right now is to sit down and really think about what are those, map it out. What are those places from the first point of contact all the way through delivery, whatever it is in the business that you're in. If you're an entertainer, you know, it starts from, you know, you might be talking about the expectations of a client. It might be talking about the expectations of the audience. We've all, you know, people in show business that, as we have been, have experienced the things like what happens when you show up and you don't have any equipment, or but there are these things, right? So you do need to know, like, you know, all those places that friction can happen, whether it's with your clients, whether it's with your customers. How are you going to be prepared to handle those? And I think that it's really important as well to not only map that out, but to think of your customer as, I think a lot of people get lost on one particular place, which is they think that once the customer's paid me the money, I'm done with them and I can move on to the next new shiny customer and try and seduce them into giving me money and on and on, right? Well, it's really that customer, as soon as they give you money, they just entrusted business with you.
Right.
They just started a relationship with you. It's absolutely not a finish line. You just got started with them. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%. And I want you also to think of something else. There are different types of customers that you have, and you just mentioned it. For the entertainer, you've got your client who's hired you, whether that's a corporate client or maybe you're working at a club. That's your client or your customer. And then you have the audience members, their customers too. So you can map out, regardless of the type of business you're in. If you're in manufacturing, you've got your very traditional, this is how a sales process works with a typical customer. What happens when we have a disgruntled customer? Okay, that's another kind of process. They're going to call up. They're going to talk to so-and-so. They're going to be transferred to here. They're going to be talking to their accounts payable to adjust whatever needs to be. So there's all these different touch points that will happen with that type of customer. Maybe you've got different levels, higher-end customers, lower-end customers, and they go through different journeys because you set it up that way. So keep that in mind. I mean, it's kind of like flying on an airplane. You've got your first class customers who are going to have a little bit different experience than maybe the people in the very back of the plane. Mm-hmm. And not that ones, I mean, obviously first class, there's a reason they call it first class, but all the airlines are promising a great customer service experience. The first class experience is probably a little better than what the others expect, but it still has, you have to have that base standard. So find out what the journey is, the touch points, and start there. That's a great exercise to do.
That's fantastic. So let me ask you now, if we can, this is the part where I like to find out, like, Shep Hyken Industries, if that's what you want to call it. But you have a business that you're running, just like the rest of us.
Sure.
So outside of the fact that you're an expert at all these other things, when it comes down to it, you have to actually run a business. And you have people that work for you, and you have offices to pay for, and you have all these things. So tell us a little bit about how you actually run your business. What is a day in the life of Shep like, and how is your business monetized?
Sure. And it's Shepherd Presentations. I started out as Shepherd, started calling it Shepherd back in 1983 when I started. Anson Williams was Patsy on Happy.
Yes, and I knew that name.
Was it Anson Williams?
It is. And how sad is it that I still remember? My brain still holds that information as something that
right.
it needs to know.
But what I thought was cool is he had a production company in Hollywood. He was doing more than just being Patsy on Happy Days. And it was called Anson Productions. And I thought, cool, he used his first name. Well, my first name is Shepherd. That's my full only time I ever get called Shepherd is when my mother's mad at me, she calls me Shepherd. Shepherd, get over here. But otherwise it's Shep. But I thought, you know, I'll call it Shepherd Presentations. So it started out actually Shepherd Productions and then turned into Shepherd Presentations. So a day in the life. Got a small office here. We have a team of four of us in the office, and there's three of us out of the office. Those are my trainers. But we, you know, everybody has their responsibilities. I have my personal assistant. He is what we call the director of amazement. There's Cindy in the office who's in charge of my media, social media, marketing. I would call her my director. Her title is director of reputation. And then there's Stephanie, who does lots of little things. We call her the manager of many things. That's actually what her title is.
I love it.
And then there's me, the chief amazement officer. And then we have our trainers and facilitators. So I usually get here, typical days, I get up about 5:15, 5:30. I do a quick little workout for about 45 minutes, 2-3 days a week, early in the morning. I actually go out and still play ice hockey. That's my total fun and enjoyment. And then I get into the office on the days I'm not playing hockey. I'm here usually by 7:15, 7:30. Days I do play hockey, a little bit later than that. And here's what's important. I try to do what I'm supposed to do. And this is like of the utmost importance, because as an entrepreneur, when I started out as a solopreneur, I did everything. And then I hired an assistant and I gave that assistant some responsibilities off of my plate, so now I could do a little bit more of the things that I was really good at and generated revenue. So I've determined that other than doing my financial things, because I actually will sign a check, outside of the financial parts of my business, there's three things that I do. And that is, number one, I speak. And that's been a primary way of my business. Number two is I write. Writing has helped get me a lot of business. The articles, the books, everything I write. Number three is I talk to the client or do something related to the client, client relations. It could be writing an email to them, writing a letter, sending even a thank you note, but it's client interaction of some sort. Those are the three things. And life has changed a little bit in that, you know, when I now, because I have my training side of my business, we have online, online on-demand type training, and then we also have the on-site training with our trainers. I actually get involved in selling that as well. But those are the main things I do. If I am seen standing over a copy machine, it's like, what are you wasting your time for? Because these people out there know that if they want to get paid, I need to be doing what brings in the money.
That's so great.
That's a support team. Cool exercise, which might be good for anybody who's listening. My friend Dan Sullivan, who's also my coach, strategic coach program, taught me this. I took an activity inventory at the end of the week or so, maybe week and a half, between my assistant and I, we wrote down 45 different task things that I did, if you will, including standing over the copy machine, packing a box of books, and talking to a client about selling an engagement. And we decided that she would take about 35 of the 45, leaving me, actually it was 30 out of the 45, leaving me about 15. Now of the 15, we recognize that 5 or 6 of those can consolidate into the client relationship side. But what her job was at that point was to protect me from the things that would basically suck time away from me so I couldn't focus on what I was supposed to be doing.
I love it. You know, it's really, and I'll be brutally honest here, it's really one of the problems that I face right now is, you know, I have way too many plates a spinning and way too many hats a wearing. And, you know, it's one of those areas that I want to kind of grow and be able to kind of delegate more stuff out. You know, and it's not like I don't have a team, but their plates are full too. You know, we just need to maybe grow a little faster.
Let me ask you this. If you could hire somebody for 3 hours a day, what would they do that would allow you to now have 3 hours a day to do something that's at the high level of profitability?
Oh, I mean, 3 hours a day is massive. I mean, right. 3 hours a day, I can't even imagine what that would be like to be able to unload 3 hours worth of work a day.
And so you can hire somebody for about, you know, $15, $20 an hour to come in your place for 3 hours and give you that support. Now, initially, you're going to spend a little bit more time communicating with them. You'll probably gain 2 hours a day. But guess what happens? If this person's good, they'll start to recognize other things that you're doing that they can pull from you. And you will get your 3 hours. And it's amazing what happens. You know, I used to get called by people saying, hey, you should participate in our business. It's part-time. 6 hours a day and you can make an extra such and such, or 6 hours a month, I'm sorry, and you can make an extra such and such time. I said, you know, if I had 6 extra hours a month to just get on the phone and talk to clients, what you're offering me is small compared to what I would make. So thank you for the opportunity, but no thanks.
Yeah, well, that's really great advice, and it's something that I'm definitely going to be doing. And in fact, maybe offline, I'll ask you if you have any leads towards VA. I don't know. Have you used VAs?
I do. I mean, I go – so I do have a virtual team. I have an editor that I work with. She's based – I think she's in Massachusetts. Wonderful woman. I've never met her before. I found her on Elance. I was just looking for somebody to do punctuation grammar editing on my articles. And she charges me a very small amount, and I give her 2 or 3 articles a week. It's a great relationship. Ron Newell, who's over in the Philippines, used to help me with some of my social media marketing. I estimate we spent about 10 hours a week with Ron Newell, and we used him for about a year, year and a half. So that's my experience. But if you can clearly explain to somebody what you want, you'll find somebody. So Upwork, which used to be Elance, and Odesk, they combined. That's where we found some really good people.
Yeah, I that's one of the areas that I have hired people in the past from Freelancer and from Odesk.
Yep.
And those are really great resources as well. But I haven't really taken the leap to having somebody who's like a kind of a permanent fixture, even if it was
virtual. For your business, there's some things that could probably be done virtually. But you know, if somebody comes in and works with you side by side and starts pulling responsibilities away from you and takes them on. That's what you're looking for. They can eventually work virtual if it's easy. But, I mean, you probably have paperwork and things like that that are a major time suck. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they come in once a week instead of 5 days a week, but they work out of their home the rest of the time.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. I'm just going to follow that.
By the way, let's delineate advice from experience. Advice is you should do this, right. Okay, whether I've done it or not. And what I'm sharing here is experience. So it works for me. And that's what I'm sharing. I think that's real important.
Cool.
So it's not theory. Yeah.
That's a great distinction. Awesome. So I want to now one of my favorite parts of the show. So we kind of have an understanding of what Shepherd Presentations is like. There's a small team buzzing away over there, and we know kind of what your responsibilities are and how you shake the tree. But let's find out what that tree is like. So what are your profitabilities? And for those of you who are just joining the show and haven't heard an episode before, I define a profitability as the thing that we all know if we would just do more of this, we would end up with more money in the bank. And sometimes it's something that we enjoy doing, and sometimes more often than not, it's something that we kind of dread doing. But we do know that the money lies behind that rock, and if we turn it over, we can uncover some. So for some people, it's picking up the phone and making calls. As Shep said, I'm sure that's going to be one of the ones you'll say.
Sure.
But for other people, you know, it can be any number of things. It can be networking. You can say, you know, if I get out of my office and get out in the world, you know, I meet people and that turns into my, you know, it can be anything. So share with us some ideas you have about what your profitabilities are.
Sure. Well, you already mentioned the first one, picking up the phone and making the call. The second one, which is probably even more important today because social media allows us to exploit this one little idea into something much bigger, and that is I write. I started writing a newsletter, gosh, before the internet was around, and it was a quarterly newsletter. And I remember shifting from my snail mail newsletter to an online newsletter. And that was a big transition back then because some of the people weren't ready to make that move. Mm-hmm. Many were. And it went from a quarterly online newsletter to a monthly to a weekly. So I've written literally hundreds of articles over the last year in a weekly newsletter. Then the next part of it is I take that content and I distribute it through social media to many different places. You can go on LinkedIn. There's places that take articles. They want your content. At a certain point in time, there will be people or publications that will syndicate off of what you write. So when I post my articles, within almost a matter of minutes, I'm syndicated into other publications. So all of a sudden, I'm getting, you know, writing the article. And to me, writing the article is the nucleus of it all. And from there, we pull little excerpts of the article out. We tweet them. We create memes with quotes from the article. So much starts with that article. We actually go on YouTube and I actually read the article into a camera. I have a little studio with a teleprompter with a camera behind it, and I actually read the article right into it. Hi, Shep Hyken here, customer service and experience expert. Today we're going to talk about whatever the title of the article is, and then I read the article.
That's fantastic.
And so, yeah, that's another major content marketing, you know, distribution point. So I would say it's all starts with writing, but it's all about content marketing.
That's great.
Big profitability that I have.
I love that you've taken that idea and really leveraged it across all the different outlets. Mm-hmm. It's really, really smart. So now you write for a number of kind of mainstream big name publications. Can you talk about some of those so we can look?
Sure. I mean, I've appeared in, many different major publications with articles that I've written that have been picked up. But I write obviously for my own blog, which gets picked up in a number of places. But I also write a weekly column for Forbes, and I'm under contract. It's not random when I feel like it. I think if I miss a week, I'll probably get yelled at. And if I miss a second week, I think they'll say goodbye. Okay, so I'm under contract with them. I'm very lucky. I think that's, by the way, there's some great publications out there that will take your articles. If you can write just a halfway decent article, they're looking for great content. And you start there and you practice and you get into a rhythm. And it is a rhythm because I do this once a week. If I don't write for 3 weeks, so sometimes I know I'm going on vacation or doing something, I'll write two or three articles at a time. And then I don't write for 3 weeks. It's like you're out of shape when you come back 3 weeks later.
That's so interesting. I was going to ask you because I can't even imagine how you keep up with the volume that you have to put out. So
sure.
Where do the ideas come from?
Well, I'll tell you, that's a great question, and I'll be happy to share it. It's my own little secret sauce, so to speak. I, by the way, block every Wednesday morning that I'm actually not on the road. I block a couple hours to write. Now, it takes me more than 2 hours to write the articles that I write. I usually write a minimum of two a week. But I usually know what I'm going to write about before I get into that. So I can knock out the Forbes article and the blog probably within 2, 3, 4 hours of writing in the week. You know, but I condense the time on that Wednesday morning. So where do I get the ideas? Because it's not always easy. Number one, I'm getting good at it. Just, that would make a great Forbes column. Okay, and I love it. And if somebody tells me they've got a new business they want to share with me, I go, give me an angle. Tell me your story. Tell me the best customer service story about your business. I might get an idea. But I actually use Google Alerts. I type in the word customer service, customer experience, and anything related to that, and I get dozens of articles every day about that. Number one, I like to read them because I learn. Number two, if I like them, I'll tweet them out and share with my community what these other great authors have done. Number three, sometimes I don't even need to read the article. I'll see the title and I'll go, that's a great idea. I don't want to read the article because I don't want to be jaded. And I just start writing about this concept, mm-hmm. my take on what I just, somebody's title of an article. Since then, I've got another thing I put together, and this is a cool thing. It's called paper.li, mm-hmm. paper.li. And it is, you create your own little newspaper, and you go in and who are the 25 people or publications that you want to follow, And then you put in keywords. So as long as the articles that they're writing or following or recommending or whatever pertain to those keywords, and they could be the Wall Street Journal or it could be Nick Knight. Okay, as long as you're talking about customer service, I'm interested, or you're writing about customer service.
Right.
And it will compile my own daily newspaper from these thought leaders and publications. Now, what's really cool is that you can allow other people to subscribe to your own feed. And so I actually named my little newspaper Customer Service Daily. And there's people that, and I just met one the other day, an editor of a major publication, the head editor. We met for the first time, and he goes, yeah, I love that every day you send out this little newspaper with all of the favorite articles. And I now if he's listening, he'll know. You don't know how easy that is to do.
Wow, that is great. That's a great tip. Well, I'll definitely put a link. And I've seen some of these paper, I guess it's called Paperly. I don't know.
Yeah, paper.ly. It's instead of like paper.com, L-I is an extension.
Yeah, and I've seen some of those, and I didn't really exactly know how it works. Now, I do know another tool very similar, it sounds like, although yours might be more of an article platform, but there's another one called Scoop.it.
Yep.
Do you know Scoop.it? And that's another one, which what's great about that is that it's a curation tool. So you can very easily create a topic and then, add all these, it searches for them for you. You can go through and you say, add this to my little newspaper, or it's more like a magazine. It adds it there too. So it sounds similar, but maybe not quite as scholarly as Paperly. But
I mean, I think they could both be scholarly, and it's just, this is the way I use it. And what's nice, if you pay, I think, $8 or $9 a month, instead of having random ads down the side, you can put your own product ads down the side.
Oh, so nice tip.
Yeah, decided to do that as well. I figure $8 a month. If I sell one book a month, that more than pays for it off of that. So hopefully, we'd sell more than that.
That's fantastic. Well, so what's next for you? What do you got going now? You're done traveling the world extensively, I'm guessing, for a little while.
Well, I still travel the world since I've stopped traveling for the National Speakers Association. By the way, I love it. We refer to that as the NSA, National Speakers Association, and. You know, he's the president of NSA, and they go, oh, he's the president. No, that's a different NSA that you're thinking of, the National Security Association. You know, the joke is the NSA speakers, we're the ones that talk. They're the ones that listen.
But that's right.
So, I thought, okay, I'm done traveling internationally for a while, but gosh, I've been to Nigeria. I've been to Istanbul and Antalya over in Turkey, all of these for clients, and today we looked to book something down in Guadalajara, which to me, we're still on this side of the world. But talked this morning about doing a four-city tour in Oman, Bahrain, Kuwait, Qatar, maybe add Saudi Arabia, just different cities. So I'm constantly – the beautiful thing is because of social media and the internet, it's not about working in the United States anymore. It's a presence all over the world. And it's amazing the followers you have I have – from doing what I do, Australia and the UK. I mean, we're constantly interacting. Singapore, Malaysia, all these companies and all these people, we're talking just as if they're next door.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Well, good. That's fantastic. It's great for you that you've kind of taken this career to the place that you have. And, it's really a global business that you're running.
It is. Just takes a while to get there sometimes.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. So where can our listeners, we know we can go to hyken.com, H-Y-K-E-N.com. I know you also have some virtual training. I don't know if we can get to that from there. You also have some books and digital products. Tell us about some of the places we can get a hold of your materials.
Well, of course, you can get all my digital products at revisit.com.
I had no idea you were going to say that.
Yes, they're awesome, these people. Who runs that company? if you just go to hyken.com, you'll see my books. If you want to learn more about my online virtual training and you want me anytime on demand, hey, that's a great name. How about shepondemand.com? So that'll take you to my virtual training site. And, hyken.com is the best place to reach me. You can email me through the site, call me, and I'm happy to talk to anybody about what we've talked about today.
Fantastic. Well, it's been great having you on the show. We got a lot of stuff to think about and a lot of stuff to take action with. So I'm sure everybody listening is saying good job. And
thanks.
I really appreciate you being here and taking this time to talk to us today.
Nick, thanks for having me.
All right, man. So we're going to see some magic from you sometime soon. Is any of that going on?
Let's see. Can I do a magic trick here? Oh, see. Let's see. We got the credit card. It's gone.
What?
Out of town.
That's awesome. Great. Shep, thanks again for being here. You're a good friend and a really great mentor for me. I really appreciate all your help.
Thanks. And I love you too, brother.
All right, man. Take care.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you'd like to learn more profit abilities, go to profitabilityshow.com for episodes, show notes, and more. And be sure to click the subscribe button to get the latest episodes delivered straight to your favorite device.